Welcome to the Capital News. I'm your host, Alex Caritas. Today is January 16th, 2020. Thank you so much for joining me. I hope everyone out there is doing well today. Impartial Justice is the title of today's podcast. This is in response to Chief Justice John Roberts being sworn in this afternoon in the United States Senate, and also the United States Senate taking an oath to administer impartial justice. We're going to talk about that more in depth, but I do want to talk about some market performance. I want to talk about some market metrics. So let's get there now. So the Dow Jones Industrial Average gained 271 points for the day, up 0.9%. It is now trading at 29,288 points. I can imagine if they haven't done so already, watching some of the financial media outlets, that members on the New York Stock Exchange will probably be wearing Dow 30,000 baseball caps in the not-too-distant future if they're not already doing so. The S&P 500 gained 28 points, up 0.8%. It is now trading at 3,316 points. Ladies and gentlemen, it is almost trading at levels that some of the most bullish analysts were predicting the S&P 500 would be trading by the end of this year. It's only the first month of 2020, and we're almost at those targets. I think the most bullish of analysts have us at 3,500 on the S&P 500. We're only a couple hundred points away. The NASDAQ 100 gained 90 points, up 1%, and the Russell 2000, the small cap index, gained 1.3% for the day and is now trading north of 1,700 points. We are very much so in the midst of a market melt-up. We have been since September. Not coincidentally, this is when the Federal Reserve started to aggressively intervene in the financial markets via their repo operations. Also through quantitative easing, although we're not supposed to call it quantitative easing. And if you look at the Federal Reserve's balance sheet, you will see a massive, massive expansion in their balance sheet, which is exactly what quantitative easing is. Do not be fooled, do not be lied to, or played like a fool when it comes to this. It is quantitative easing, period. And with it, the stock market has melted up and it has rallied. And we said that that was going to be a possibility. The markets don't care. We live in a country where most people don't even know what the Federal Reserve is, let alone what it does. Most Americans do not own financial assets. And those that play the game on Wall Street couldn't care less about you, your family, or any other fundamental situation when it comes to the economic realities of this country and what is actually needed. They don't care. It's just a game. It's just a casino. We're just here to make money. Get in, get out. I'm getting mine. You get yours. That's what this country has turned into. Everything is about money. Everything is about profit. And that's why we have a moral decay and a moral decline that exists in this country, that is really tearing apart the fabric of our society, which is the family unit. If you have a strong family unit or any strong sense of family, you're that much more likely going to have a stronger society, a more moral and righteous character amongst its people and citizens, and by extension, to its government, one that can be held to account. We have a government that is completely out of control and has been out of control for quite a while. We have a Federal Reserve that has been out of control, but now it is putting the pedal to the metal and printing money like it's going out of style, because it is. We have trillion-dollar deficits. We have a Federal Reserve that's printing tens of billions of dollars on a nightly basis, or lending out tens of billions of dollars on a nightly basis, I should say. Sometimes $100 billion. All depends on how much demand there is in these overnight markets. But there's nothing to see here, folks. It was supposed to be temporary. It was supposed to be a one-off situation back in September. Pay no attention to the man behind the curtain. Continue on watching your football games, your Housewives of Atlanta. Continue taking your Prozac and your Valiums. Pay no attention to the man behind the curtain. Well, I'm telling you to pay attention to the man behind the curtain. And if you want the reality to change and change for the better, then you have to abolish the Federal Reserve. And you have to abolish the federal income tax. It's just that simple. Now, it's not going to be simple to do it, but that's what we have to start with. Otherwise, you're just swinging at the branches. You have to strike at the root. So that's the stock market. It's going most likely going to continue to rally. It's most likely going to continue to melt up. Not because the underlying economic situation is getting better here in the United States. That's something I want to talk about here shortly, some of those metrics. But just because there's money printing, and that's all it takes. That's all it is now. It's bought and paid for by the Federal Reserve. Or as I should say, it's bought for by the Federal Reserve. It's going to be paid for by average, everyday Americans. Because this money does not come into existence for free. It comes into existence with interest attached to it. That's the game. We're all suckers. Crude oil is trading at $58.60 a barrel. Brent, the international metric, is trading at $64.70 a barrel. Natural gas continues to get, pummeled. It's relentless to the downside right now. It's trading at $2 a decatherm. We haven't been this low for a few years. And remember, it wasn't that long ago, 2015, 2016, where you had the mini recession in manufacturing, and a lot of that was predicated off of the natural gas and oil and energy industry at large. A year ago, you had natural gas at about $4, $4 a decatherm. It's been cut in half. Okay, I'm telling you, the supply-demand functions of this, we are awash. We are awash in natural gas. Also with oil, too, but especially natural gas with what's been taking place here in the United States really over the past decade with all of the fracking technologies and with all of the new discoveries that have been taking place around the country. We have gold trading at $1,557 an ounce. Silver is at $18.02 an ounce. Again, I strongly believe that the precious metals market is in the midst of a multi-year bull run. You have to understand that real negative interest rates, which is what we have here, because you take the nominal rate minus inflation, and we have inflation starting to tick up, so we're going deeper into negative real interest rates, okay? That is the fuel. That is the fuel for precious metals, particularly gold and silver. And when you look at the prices of gold and silver, particularly gold, it is making record highs across global currencies. Across global currencies. The only one that it has yet to do so and really hold above is the U.S. dollar. Okay, and there's a lot of reasons why that's the case. But there are a lot of people out there who think that the U.S. dollar is likely to take a shellacking. It quite possibly could. I would not be surprised. However, I think the United States dollar is going to have a swan song to the upside before it collapses. So I just think it's, you know, sort of the best girl at the dance, the best house in a bad neighborhood, that type of situation. And there continues to be a liquidity crunch, which is what we're witnessing in the repo market. So there's going to be a lot of demand for U.S. dollars. There's a lot of debt, a lot of foreign debt, emerging market debt that is coming due. It's priced in U.S. dollars. That means there's going to be demand for U.S. dollars. So I do think there is going to be a final run-up, a big leg up perhaps, within the U.S. dollar before we see that collapse. But I do believe the collapse is almost inevitable just simply because of the amount of debt that we carry, the endless wars that we continue on with, the fiscal irresponsibility, trillion-dollar deficits. And this has not been in the midst of a recession. So when a recession hits, not if, but when, it's going to be even more severe, $1.5 trillion, maybe even two. Who knows? It will be bad, believe me when I tell you. And that will cause a crisis in confidence that Uncle Sam is not going to be paying back his bills. And the only way that he's going to be able to do so is with the printing press. That's not what we're supposed to do here in the land of the free, home of the brave, in the United States of America. Not a country that espouses free market capitalism. You know who turns on the printing presses to monetize their debt? Banana republics do. Not constitutional republics, banana republics. But that's exactly where we're headed, is the monetization of our debt, which we're already in the midst of doing. That's what quantitative easing is in effect. Okay, make no mistake about it. We're already there. The only thing we got going for us is that everybody else is a banana republic too. I mean, everything's just fantastic. Honky-dory, it's boomtown. Unbelievable. So that's the commodity space. That's the precious metal space. Pay attention to it. Do your homework. Get diversified. On the bond side, we have Uncle Sam's 10-year treasury note yielding 1.83%. That's been range-bound, 1.79, 1.83% over the past couple of days. Really no flight to safety for any reason, really no getting out of Dodge and really having rates spike because, well, we just signed the best deal ever and the USMCA was passed today in the Senate. So, you know, according to President Trump today, you know, the two biggest and best deals ever made were just finally finalized over the past 2 days. So why are U.S. Treasuries, why is the 10-year yielding 1.82%? Shouldn't everybody be out of bonds? Shouldn't everybody be getting into risky assets? Well, that doesn't appear to be the case. Now, maybe it will. The bond market is a huge market, so maybe it's just going to take some time to unwind. But I don't think that's going to be the case. I think the bond market understands what's actually going on here. Over in China, we have Chinese 2019 GDP growth weakest in 29 years. The Chinese economy advanced 6% year over year in the fourth quarter of 2019. The same as in the third quarter, matching market expectations. This remained the weakest growth rate since the first quarter of 1992, amid trade pressure from the U.S. and sluggish demand from home and abroad. For full year 2019, the economy grew by 6.1%, the slowest pace in 29 years, but still within the government's target of 6 to 6.5%. Do I believe this number? No, I do not. But that's what they're giving us, so that's what we're going to deal with. I'm sure it is below 6%, but the Chinese cannot afford some sort of confidence crisis either. Okay, and that's why they love the deal that they just made with the United States of America, that it's going to allow the United States of America to invest in their non-performing loans. You know what a non-performing loan is? It means they're not paying them back. Okay, so your retirement is very likely going to be bailing the Chinese out because they're swimming in $40 trillion worth of debt. $40 trillion. To build all of those ghost cities, to build all of those bullet trains, to bring so much forward demand, consumption, production forward, just so they can tout themselves of having 6% GDP, 7, 8, 9, 10%, whatever it was, over years prior, okay? Again, folks, we said this yesterday, there is no substitute for China. India does not have it. They don't have it. They don't even have the infrastructure to start building out their infrastructure. So they are not going to be the quote-unquote next economic miracle that is going to bail out the global economy. They're just not there yet. And I don't think that the Indians are going to make the same mistakes and take that same playbook out of the Chinese Communist Party. I would hope they wouldn't, but they might, but they right now they can't. They are limited, and they're just not, it's just not going to happen. The United States is not going to be the player that is going to lift the global economy out of its slowdown. It's not going to do it. We don't have enough juice. It's not going to be Europe. They're still going down. It's not going to be Japan. It's not going to be anywhere else. And don't forget, folks, this is actually something that is healthy. As painful now as it's going to be because we've continued to kick this further and further down the road, it is a healthy process. It gets rid of the inefficiencies. It hopefully gets rid of all of the malinvestments. Not some, but all of them. Because that's what happened during the Great Financial Crisis. The market was in the process of cleansing itself of all of these poor investments, these malinvestments. But the governments around the world couldn't have it. So they came in, they intervened, they picked their winners, they picked their losers, they had their respective taxpayers bail out major corporations, the financial sectors, their central bankers started printing money like it was going out of style. They came up with negative interest rates, they came up with quantitative easing, they came up with all this BS, and we're still paying the price for it. And now we are once again embarking on these same emergency policies. Here in the United States, trillion-dollar deficits, quantitative easing, low interest rates, and a president of the United States who is calling for negative interest rates, which is grounds for dismissal and removal as far as I'm concerned. The taxation is theft. The inflation and currency devaluation is theft. The quantitative easing is theft. An outright wealth transfer from the middle class to the upper echelons of the income brackets. And negative interest rates is outright theft as well. So much for draining the swamp. But you know, with all of this talk that this is the greatest economy ever in the history of the United States of America, which I always call BS on because that's what it is. But you know, today I was like, well, you know, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm wrong, and not every day do I do a deeper dive into a lot of the metrics. I mean, we talk about them here quite a bit, but not every day do I actually go online and I actually look at the numbers on a year-over-year basis, because I tell you, it's not just the number that they're going to produce, it's not just that headline number, you have to look at the rate of change, you have to look at that percentage change from a year-over-year basis. All right, and that's what I did today. So some market metrics that I looked at. Just to see, really, if we are in boomtown here. I looked at construction. I looked at retail. I looked at manufacturing. I looked at industrial production. I looked at transports. I looked at federal, state, and local tax receipts. I looked at corporate profits. And I looked at jobless claims, continuing claims. I looked at hours worked, average work week, all that stuff. Not good. There isn't any one of these points, which is the economy, not good. A lot of these points are in recession territory. Some of these points are where they were during the Great Financial Crisis. The Great Financial Crisis, the Great Recession, whatever you want to call it, was supposed to be a once-in-a-lifetime event. This was 10 years ago. And we now see numbers here in the United States that we have not seen since the Great Recession. So how can this be the best economy ever if we have data that is showing us that we are where we were 10 years ago? It doesn't make any sense whatsoever. The President of the United States and his lackeys, all they point to is two things, maybe three. They point to the unemployment rate, which is a lagging indicator, and those of you who follow this podcast know what that means. If not, take the time to go on the CapitalNews.com website and check out one of our Capital Economics presentations, or on our YouTube channel, you can find it there as well. So they talk about the unemployment rate, because it's at a 50-year low, and they talk about the stock market. Well, the stock market is not the economy, and most Americans do not own financial assets. They do not own stocks. They do not own bonds. They do not own real estate. They don't trade in the currency markets. They don't do any of that stuff. They don't have gold and silver or any other type of precious metal. They don't have financial assets. Okay? The top 10% of the income bracket here in the United States owns 90% of the financial assets. So the Trump administration wants to talk about unemployment being at a 50-year low, which is true by the metrics they report. What they fail to leave out is the quality of those jobs. What they fail to leave out is the amount of people who are working two jobs just to make ends meet. Some people three. If you had such a great economy, You would not need to be working two jobs just to make ends meet. One job should be sufficient, and if it's the best economy ever, it should be more than sufficient. But that's not the case. So it's not just the quantity, it's the quality. And the quality is just not that great. And when you start to look at jobless claims, you're starting to see an uptick. And this uptick, if it really starts to go from below the zero line into positive territory, it's almost all but certain you're in recession territory. When you take into consideration all of the other metrics that we look at and we go over during our capital economics presentations as well, and some of the issues that we talk about here on the podcast as well. So all of those things, construction, retail, manufacturing. I mean, wasn't Trump supposed to bring back all these manufacturing jobs? No, not the case. Not the case. Look it up. All you have to do is go to Google. Type in FRED, F-R-E-D, Federal Reserve Economic Data. You can type in FRED, space, Federal Reserve, click on it, and boom, it should come up. There's your website. Click on a link, and then you'll have a search tab. Type in those words in that search bar, construction, and then there's a list that'll populate. Click on each one of the top five that come up. Click on it. What you're going to first see is the levels. That's what it's called, just the basic data. Click on edit graph, and then go down, scroll down, and change it to the year-over-year percentage change, from a year ago. All right? Type in construction. Type in retail, manufacturing, industrial production, transports, federal receipts, state and local receipts, corporate profits, jobless claims, unemployment. And look it up for yourself if you don't believe me. Do yourself a favor. Federal receipts. Supposed to be boomtown. Everybody's supposed to be working. That means there's supposed to be a whole bunch of money going to the federal treasury. We got these tariffs. China's paying all these tariffs, which of course is not the case, but they're supposed to be flooding the United States Treasury with all this cash. Nope, not if you look at the data. Not the case. Not the case. Look at corporate profits. Find out when corporate profits peaked. One would think, if this was the greatest economy ever, that corporate profits would have peaked or would have been accelerating. In 2017, 2018, 2019, no. When did they peak? In 2014. That's when corporate profits have peaked. This stock market is completely decoupled from the underlying economy. It's completely decoupled from its own from the own companies within the stock market. Because this isn't on profit growth. It's not. Corporate profits peaked in 2014. That was a different president at the time. Look it up. Look it up. You want to talk about transportation with the Cass Freight Index out once again for their December numbers? The decline, the 13th consecutive month-over-month decline, year-over-year basis. Hitting an acceleration or a deceleration, I should say, perhaps, into negative territory that we have not seen since the Great Recession. We have not seen this type of decline in the Cass Freight Index since the Great Recession. So if you want to believe in that Dow theory, like I do, we've talked about that. That's why we say on occasion we talk about the Dow Jones Industrial Transports, because it should be a leading indicator. Historically, it has been, because you got to get goods from point A to point B. So it makes sense. If there's more goods being shipped from point A to point B, then there should be a more vibrant, a more stronger economy. Well, that's not the case. That's not the case. Look at default and delinquency rates on automobiles. We talked about this last year. When this podcast got started last February, about the rising delinquencies, people 90 plus days late paying their car payment, continues to increase, folks. $1.6 trillion in student debt, most of which is not even being paid back because these young people cannot find jobs, or the jobs that they are finding are not paying enough for them to pay rent, pay for their transportation, a car, whatever, pay for health insurance, pay for groceries, and then have something left over to pay down their student debt. This is a travesty. This is a crime. But nobody will be held to account. Nobody will go to jail. And nothing is going to be changed. Nothing. This is not the greatest economy ever. It's not even close. A lot of these metrics are closer to where we were during the depths of that once-in-a-lifetime great financial crisis, the Great Recession of 08-09. But I guess if you continue with the lie and you say it and repeat it often enough that people begin to believe it. Was there extra stimulus that was thrown into the economy? There's no question about it. Those tax cuts, most definitely a stimulus. Most definitely. But how are they paid for? They're paid for with trillion-dollar deficits. Deficits, plural. Because we are going to be paying and suffering from trillion-dollar deficits as far as the eye can see. Deregulation. That's also a boon. That's a good thing. It can be, or it could lead to some excesses. It could lead to malinvestment if it's not balanced appropriately. But who cares, because you got a Federal Reserve that just keeps printing and printing and printing and printing. That won't allow the stock market to correct. It won't allow for free market capitalism to do what it's supposed to do. To seek out price discovery. That's all. If it goes up, it goes up. That's fine. If it goes down, it goes down. That's fine. It's price discovery. That's what it's all about. But we can't have that here in the United States of America. We can't tolerate free market capitalism here. It needs to be state-run. It needs to be centrally planned. That's why it's called a central bank. I mean, they don't even hide it from you. It's right in your face. So that's the market performance. Those are some of the market metrics I just wanted to look at today because I thought maybe I'm going crazy. You know, it's the best thing ever. You know, best trade deal ever. Then why wasn't President Xi here? Right? If it was such a good deal for both countries, then why wasn't President Xi here to sign it? Interesting question, isn't it? So, to the title of today's podcast, Impartial Justice. This was an historic day in the United States of America. Chief Justice John Roberts was sworn in today in the United States Senate because he will be presiding over the trial, the impeachment trial of President Donald J. Trump. After he was sworn in by Senator Chuck Grassley of Iowa, he is the Senate pro temp, which basically means he is third in line to the presidency. You would have the vice president and the Speaker of the House, and then it would go to the Senate pro temp. You know, there was something that I thought was rather significant during the swearing in and actually right after that followed. Some of you may have heard it on the microphone. It wasn't a part of the oath, but it was Senator Chuck Grassley saying to Chief Justice Roberts, after the Chief Justice said, "I do," Chuck Grassley said, "God bless you. God bless you." Because I think Chuck Grassley understands the significance, the history, and the gravity of this situation. This has only occurred 3 times in the history of the United States of America. Once with President Andrew Johnson in the late 1860s, and then 20 years ago with President Bill Clinton, and now again today. This is serious stuff, folks. I know the media wants to hype it up that it's everything's partisan, that the politicians want to hype everything up that it's partisan, that the Democrats rushed everything, that it was just a witch hunt, it's just a hoax, it's just ba-ba-ba-ba-ba. And then the Republicans, Mitch McConnell, wants to come out and say, yeah, the Democrats rushed everything, but guess what we're going to do in the Senate? We're going to rush through it also. Well, wait a minute. If you're going to criticize them and call them out for rushing it, wouldn't you think then the right thing to do would be to take your time with the trial, to rise above the politics and the partisanship and actually respect the process? If you're going to ridicule the other side, shouldn't you be the one setting the example to do it right? Otherwise, you're just acting like a bunch of five-year-olds.
Well, he did it, so I can do it too.
That's all our politics is right now, folks. It's a bunch of five-year-olds, and I mean no disrespect to five-year-olds. They don't know better. Maybe these idiots in Congress don't either, but some of them do, and I think Chuck Grassley's one of them. Because when he said, God bless you, to Chief Justice John Roberts, I said, yeah, I think this guy gets it. I think he understands the severity and the gravity of this situation, and I can only hope that the rest of the U.S. senators who stood up this afternoon and raised their right hand and swore an oath to administer impartial justice, that they too understand the gravity of this situation. It is incumbent upon these senators now to respect and uphold their oath and to respect the United States Constitution. It's their solemn obligation. It's a moral obligation. They have to. This cannot be rubber stamped along partisan lines. This is a trial. It needs to be a trial. It needs to look like a trial. Because it is a trial. There needs to be witnesses. There needs to be further documentation. People need to be subpoenaed, subpoena them. They need to be deposed beforehand, depose them. This is what needs to be done. The American people need to know the truth. Let the truth be known and let justice be served, no matter who is implicated. No matter if the president is impeached and removed, or if he's exonerated. No matter if another Republican becomes implicated in this, or a Democrat, or multiple Democrats. I don't care. And neither should you, as long as it is done within the confines of the law. Everybody is innocent until proven guilty. But to continue to call this a witch hunt, which Donald Trump did today from the Oval Office, because he was questioned this afternoon in regards to Lev Parnas, the associate of Rudy Giuliani. Oh, I don't know the guy. I don't know him. I never met him. I mean, yeah, maybe we met him. Yeah, there's some pictures. But guess what? I'm the president of the United States. I take pictures with everybody. There's people standing behind me right now. Never met him before, but we're going to take pictures. I don't know. Isn't it always convenient when it's somebody who can do damage to the president or can contradict a story or whatever it might be? He doesn't know them. Remember, he did this with Ambassador Gordon Sondland. His ambassador. I don't know him. Never met the guy. I have no idea what he's talking about. No idea. Doesn't know who Lev Parnas is. Well, I don't think that's necessarily true. I think he's going to have a problem with this one. Because Lev Parnas and, you know, the interview part two with Rachel Maddow this evening was talking about, you know, some of the legal situation that he's going through and how he was going about finding attorneys and how he was being jostled around between President Trump's own personal lawyers and some of his legal team and how they were going to represent him and sort of put them under his shield and say, you know, everybody's here, it's all, you know, attorney-client privilege, executive privilege, all that stuff. You're going to be protected, this, that, or the other. Then he gets away from it. And then it goes back and you have, at least according to some of his documents that have been released, and Jay Sekulow, one of the personal attorneys for the president, states that the president himself gave the authority that Lev Parnas can go out and do, you know, what he has to do with in regards to getting his own attorney or whatever the case might have been in that regard. I don't have the exact quote in front of me. That's why I'm scrambling a little bit, and I apologize for that. But that's basically what it is. Basically, the point I'm trying to convey here is that the president knows who Lev Parnas is. He knows who he is. It doesn't mean they're best friends. Doesn't mean they're going to baseball games together or to their grandkids' birthday parties or anything like that. But they know each other. They know each other. It's just convenient. This is what Donald Trump does. This is what the Clintons did too. This is what a lot of politicians do. They just deny, 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 deny. Deny, deny, deny. And that's what Donald Trump does. Continues to say it's a witch hunt. Continues to call out the whistleblower and saying how the whistleblower was a hoax and saying how his phone call was perfect and how everything that the whistleblower said was completely false. That statement is completely false and most likely an outright lie from the president himself. Everything that the whistleblower stated in his or her complaint proved to be the case. And we know this because the phone call transcript was released by the White House. That very same perfect phone call. That transcript was released. That was the transcript. That was the phone call that was in question. The cause of concern from the whistleblower. Bing, bang, boom. All points, all the names that the whistleblower discussed in their formal complaint was discussed in that phone call. So the president is either hugely ignorant of what actually took place on that phone call and what the whistleblower complaint actually was, or he is outright lying to the American people every time he says this. So it's massive ignorance or it's a huge lie. Neither is acceptable. You know this. This audience knows this because I read the documents in their entirety on this podcast. I read those documents. I read to you the whistleblower complaint. I read to you the transcript that was released by the White House. They match up. They match up. So every time the president says this, he is hoping that his followers don't like to read. He is hoping that they just take him at his word. And guess what, folks? He knows his base pretty damn well. And a lot of his base apparently haven't read it, because if they did, they would know he's lying about this. And that's why I took the time here, not just to listen to Fox News or CNN or MSNBC and to go with what they're spouting off. That's why I took the time, because I knew this was going to be a serious moment in the history of this country, and I wasn't just going to go off of some talking head who gets paid six figures, seven figures to read whatever's put on that teleprompter. I'm going to read you the documents in their entirety. And that's what we did here. That's what we did here. So the president is either, again, massively ignorant of the facts of this case, or he is outright lying. Neither is acceptable. So now the trial in the Senate is set to take place to start on next Tuesday. It is expected to last at least a couple of weeks, maybe a few, if witnesses come. If there's more documents, then this could be extended. Don't forget that Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi had extended an invitation to President Trump to give his State of the Union on the 4th of February. So it's very possible that this trial is still going to be taking place during that time frame. So the president will have a decision to make whether or not he wants to give the State of the Union address if the trial is still taking place. I believe that is also something that happened during the Bill Clinton trial. He did give his State of the Union address, and I do believe that he did not mention the impeachment trial. Donald Trump, on the other hand, if we get to that situation, he's a little bit more combative. Quite possible that he would call it out front and center. I would hope that he wouldn't, but it's most likely that he would. The senators in that situation, especially the Republican senators, they'd have to stay true to their oath in that circumstance, and they could not rise. They could not stand and give the president a round of applause. They couldn't, because that would be outright breaking their oath of impartial justice if they're showing favoritism to the defendant. Now, of course, you can say, all right, well, they do that now on television. I am hoping, and you can say, Alex, you're an idiot for being hopeful or optimistic, but I am hopeful that the gravity of this situation, this oath, that these senators, all of them, Democrats, Republicans, Independents, they take this trial seriously. They have to, for the sake of the Constitution, for the sake of this country. This cannot just be a wham-bam, thank you, ma'am trial. This has to be treated with gravity, with the seriousness that it deserves. Impartial justice. We'll find out. Thank you so much for joining me today, ladies and gentlemen. Please like, share, subscribe, get the word out, and leave your comments. We do love hearing from you. Stay diversified, stay vigilant, and stay with the Capital News. I am Alex Caritas. Godspeed.